Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week Podcast.
Without having to worry about who owns Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but a separate person says they own Leatherface.
Right.
This is a much cleaner situation, sounds like. And so I think this game has a really good chance.
Maybe they have a crossover with the Muppets or something. I don't know. Miss Piggy is one of the killers running around with a big knife and her curls are bouncing all over the place.
She's wearing Kermit's face.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that. That's disturbing. Oh God.
But they never really use the, like, the names of the people on there. So it'd be like, you know, Jilted Bacon Lover or something like that. You know?
JBL. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Get your audacity up and running.
In case of emergencies.
We'll be underway in approximately 3 minutes. For all of you frequent flyers, we thank you for flying Gamers Week Air.
GWA.
We'd like to give a special welcome to our Mile High Club members.
Raise your hand if you're on that list here on the flight. We can move you guys to the back of the plane, curtain you off.
Please keep sessions to 10 minutes or less. courtesy of the other passengers.
And if you enjoyed what you heard, don't be afraid to give somebody a pat on the back as they head back to their seat.
Or the really nice, Clark.
Well, that's the cold open taken care of.
There we go. Look at that. All right, everybody. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, the worst, and the weirdest headlines of the past week of the video game industry. This is episode 87. Today is Wednesday, August 23rd, 2023. And my name is Ryan, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews. But I have the unique honor, nay, the pleasure of having two ghosts of patron saints have joined me today on the podcast. So our first patron saint is Blue Williams, the patron saint of Metroidvanias. Now, legend has it that Saint Blue was a brave and persistent gamer who navigated countless pixelated labyrinths and battled pixel-perfect enemies with determination of a caffeinated squirrel. Gamers far and wide now invoke the name Saint Blue whenever they find themselves lost in a maze of twisty passages, all alike in the hope that their journey through the world of Metroidvanias might be a tad less frustrating and a lot more hilarious. Patron Saint Blue, how are you doing today?
Bless you, my son. I'm doing well. Thank you. That was a very touching eulogy. I'm not sure how I died to become the patron saint of Metroidvanias, but I like that.
We'll work it into your backstory. We'll figure that one out.
Okay.
Next up is the patron saint of vegan strip clubs, Donnie G.
We know how Donnie G died.
Legend has it that Saint Donnie has a charismatic and plant-based performer who sashayed onto the stage with a grace of a gazelle and the confidence of a kale smoothie. with a feather boa made out of organic lettuce and a dazzling smile that could rival a sunrise over an avocado orchard. Donnie teased enchanted audiences by tantalize without tantalizing taste buds. Instead of dollar bills, admirers would toss soybeans and quinoa grains onto the stage, creating a delightful symphony of plant-based percussion. Patron Saint Donnie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, but if I were a vegan stripper, I probably wouldn't even be able to make it through one song before tiring out.
I'm a little concerned with the digestive consequences of having so much quinoa given to him.
I don't normally eat quinoa, so I don't know the effects it would have on my body.
Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Blue's not allowed to have quinoa.
Nice.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests for the week. At Samtisfaction, fun episode as always, fellas. Still can't believe none of you really like strategy games. Sad face.
Oh. It's not like I actively dislike them. I just haven't found the right strategy game for me.
There you go. Well said.
Next up from at the Whistler, it said, I remember mailing, yes, snail mail, $15 to Gaia Online's office to get special skins in the early days as a kid. Only did it a few times. The last time my money was stolen. My parents let that be a teaching moment for me.
Don't ever send cash through the mail.
And lastly, at Sanity Crypto, Marvin the Martian boxer should have a ball pouch in this day and age.
Because the younger generation wouldn't know who Marvin the Martian is, only us older people. Therefore, you get the idea.
The support is very important.
Got a classic case of the OMBs.
And now it's time for the
It's like what they're trying to say over there at the Gamers Week podcast, you know, with the
very intense painting,
with the votes and
very illicit pencil.
You know what I'm trying to say here.
Very intelligent president.
Jesus Christ. Shut the F up, Donnie. VIP. Very important poll.
What's he talking about?
Yeah.
These freaking people, man.
What's wrong with
this
Walter,
makes
dude?
Me
what
sick.
Do you care? I did not watch my brothers fall down in the muck with their controllers in their hands in the console
Walter,
wars of the
this
90s.
Has nothing to just do to with have... the console wars, man.
Well, I mean, maybe not in the literal sense, but you know.
No, there's not even a connection.
Yeah,
no,
there's a slight
role.
Connection. My, what
your
I'm trying
role.
To say is...
All I'm saying is...
Hey, you ready to get messed up, man? I see you voted your way into this week's poll, man. Dios míos, man. Ryan Blue and me, we're going to mess you up.
Yeah? Well, that's like your opinion, man.
Let me tell you something, pendejo. You try to pull any of that stuff in our poll this week? You try to complain that your choice wasn't put in there? You tried to add a fifth option? You tried to say that Bob Hoskins was the best voice of Mario? I take that mouse away from you, wrap it around your neck, and shove it up your butt and kick you in each butt cheek until the mouse goes click. Jesus. You said it, man. Nobody messes with the Jesus.
Oh, my God. I was hoping you would end it with nobody messes with the Jesus.
Of course. You have to.
That was amazing.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP.
Our very important poll, man. If you like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC.
So the question this week was, Charles Martinet, the original voice of Mario in Nintendo games since the 1990s, just announced he's stepping away from his longtime role as the iconic plumber. So this week we're asking, who has done your favorite portrayal of Mario? Coming in fourth, and no surprise to anyone, Chris Pratt at 7.1%. Sliding into number three was Lou Albano at 17.8%. Coming in second at a very close 20.3% was Bob Hoskins. And, well, as you would guess, blowing everybody out of the water at 54.8% was Charles Martinet, the OG. So let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. At King Nintendo Fan says, I'd put Martin A at 1, Walker Boone at number 2. At SCP Word says, all the respect in the world to Martin A and his legacy, but Hoskins made Mario believable. A gritty, tough, but loving and caring plumber from Brooklyn who somehow became a hero. Hoskins made Mario make sense. Glug, 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 glug. At Clayman71 says, Pedro Pascal voice, it's-a me, Mario. At GoHoWoGo says, don't forget Ron Jeremy, who lays a different kind of body. And at MawGAC says, seriously, who voted for Chris Pratt?
Amen.
I think that might have been more of a joke, but we shall see. So based on these options this week, Blue, who was your choice of favorite Mario?
It's got to be Charles Martinet, right? He's the voice of Mario since, I believe, Mario 64. I don't know how anybody else could even come close. The shows were all short-lived, and the movie was, well, it was what it was.
No additional context needed.
No. But until the day that I die, when I think of Mario, I will think of Charles Martinet.
Well said. Ryan, what about you?
I'm going to pick the man that not only was Mario, but starred in Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun. The late, great Mr. Lou Albano. He was Mario to me as a kid. It was, hey, paisanos, and all that stuff. It was Dude, Mario, right? I mean, there was that one episode where they're breakdancing and stuff. I mean, I don't think it gets better, in my mind at least, from a nostalgic standpoint, as Lou Albano as Mario. Now, not knocking Charles Martinet. I think when you think of the voice of Mario, absolutely, 100%. But he is hands down my favorite portrayal. So, Lou, this one's for you.
Now, I'm going to correct you just one second. You did say Mr. Lou Albano. He is captain.
Oh,
he has earned that title.
Oh, the disrespect. The disrespect.
He was a professional wrestler, and he was the captain, Lou Albano, yes. So I will concede. You are correct, sir.
What about you, Donnie?
You know, I think they all of these people brought their own thing to Mario. Martinet.
Lawrence just showed up. Yeah, good old Chuck Martinet.
Who the heck is Chuck Martinet? Charles Martinet, you know, like you said, he is the voice of Mario. Then you've got Bob Hoskins, who portrayed him very well for whatever that was worth in the movie back in the day. Lou Albano, I think, was the very first live action Mario that I ever got witness to, because this show was on whenever I was a kid. And even, I'm going to say, Chris Pratt didn't do a terrible job.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Each one of these guys brings their own uniqueness to it. And I don't really have a favorite out of all of these guys. So this is going to be one of those answers where I'm going to cheat a little bit and just say all of them.
All of them, including Ron Jeremy.
You know what?
Especially Ron Jeremy.
I think he did. I think there was a parody, quote unquote, of Mario that.
Super horny, oh, brother.
There you go.
Blue art right off the tip of her tongue. I already knew.
I knew because I had to Google it. I was like, what? Because Go Hobo Go posted the picture of Ron Jeremy dressed as Mario, and I was like, what fresh hell is this? So I Googled it, and apparently, yeah, there was a porn parody of Mario Brothers called Super Hornio Brothers, and the sequel even, Super Hornio Brothers 2.
Was that Doki Doki Panic 2 or whatever it
was? I'm not sure which was the source material. I wonder how close they stayed to the original title.
I will come back next week and after watching this one, and then I'll have a definitive answer.
That'll be an excellent conversation for our Uncut episode.
It's going to go on eBay and find a DVD copy.
VHS covers to both films. Hold on to your joystick.
He lays a different kind of pipe. That's great.
We all learned something here today.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons for the week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Doomgy Forever, Ludo Timbo, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Skull Azeel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Dirty Knees Thunder Cheese, Evo Lust, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamma Troid, Michael LeKite, Emo Wesk, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcake's Number One Stand, Ducks with Thick Thighs. I have some information that you can choose to use or not use. It's up to you. These guys will read anything that is put in that Patreon name. And when I say anything, I mean anything. Mike Gucci's Harry. Wizard of Zardoz. Boston Ducknut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Simon 81, B&D Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Johnny Boombods, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, and Steven Sand.
And go for yourself, San Diego.
If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly band.
Thinking about it. I love
that. She's got the giggles.
You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
Mike, who, cheese, Harry. D. Norma Stinson, Mike Hoochie's Harry.
What would their wedding be like?
Oh, man, my face hurts. So why don't we jump into headlines for the week? Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. This week, we've got the exclusive inside scoop of the next two Game Club titles. They'll be playing American Gladiators and Street Fighter / Fighting Street, the TG16 port of Street Fighter. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. I distinctly remember American Gladiators on the NES and the like Wilhelm scream that happens when you knock somebody up off of the platform. But I also remember that game being ridiculously hard, renting it and being so frustrated because how hard it was.
Yeah, I don't remember that game at all.
I feel like I watched Davey and Dex play it on the Finer Things.
I think you're right. I think actually maybe that was my suggestion.
Oh, right. So, you know, if they're playing it on the Finer Things, then it's a special vintage of garbage.
Mm. Yeah, it's a POS. Mm-hmm. From Forbes, the Atari 2600 is back, backwards compatible, and it's got wood.
Thank you, Forbes.
The Atari 2600, the console that shook the world in the late 70s and early 80s, is back. Atari, in partnership with PlayOn,
sure,
I guess, has today unveiled a modern-day faithful recreation of the console that both dominated the North American market and led to the video game crash of 1983. The remake, which takes its visual inspiration from the 4-Switch CX2600-A model from 1980, will launch worldwide on November 17th and is now available to pre-order for $129.99. Purists are thoroughly catered to, thanks to the inclusion of the Atari 2600 Plus's CX40 Plus, recreated with the same size and layout as the original 2600 joystick controller for that added touch of nostalgia. Much like its predecessor, it's got wood. That natural panel is as authentic as it gets. To further push the spirit of the original Atari 2600, it's also backward compatible with both 2600 and 7800 games. The Atari 2600 Plus will launch with 10 classic games from the console's repertoire: Adventure, Combat, Dodge'em, Haunted House, Maze Craze, Missile Command, Real Sports Volleyball, Surround, Video Pinball, and Jar's Revenge. and each has been created using modern technology to authentically replicate the original 4-Switch Atari 2600 video game system. The Atari 2600 Plus also built on the original machine with features including an HDMI output, USB power, plus multiple screen resolutions. If you want to go even deeper into the Atari 2600 rebirth, Playon has recreated the Twisty CX30 paddle controller, which you can get for $24.99. Wade Rosen, CEO and chairman of Atari, said, "Preserving classic games is a priority for Atari, and the release of the Atari 2600 will make the hundreds of Atari 2678 games that have been released over the last 50 years universally accessible. And where, oh where, are the 5200 games?"
In the who gives a crap pile.
Well, I'm saying this whole thing is a who gives a crap. Are you kidding me? Do they have Sega? Are they partnering with Sega to make this bad decision? There are tons and tons, and I mean literally tons, of Atari 2600s that I constantly see on Facebook Marketplace. If I remember correctly, the old 2600, you needed an adapter to play the 7800 games. So if that adapter is cheaper than me paying $130 for this thing, I'm going to go get the adapter.
I question as who this is catering to.
The hardcore nostalgia guy?
Yeah, people who were children in the 70s.
Right, remember. But that would require you to have access to a lot of, I mean, feasibly you can go to any retro game store and pick up just a fistful of Atari games for 50 cents a pop. But that person is not necessarily into gaming, I guess, as much. I don't really see who this is catering to. That being said, I'm probably going to buy one.
I kind of figured.
Mostly because I have a pretty large Atari 2600 collection that I would like to not have to F around with the adapter that you got to plug in and all that stuff. So it's going to be more convenient. The $130 price point is a little steep. So what I'm probably going to do is wait around until it goes on sale on Newegg on Black Friday or something.
Of course.
And pick one up.
But so you just answered your own question, though.
Right. But I'm like,
who is this for?
I'm a rare individual. Like,
it's for weirdo niche collectors who, for some reason, have actual Atari cartridges as opposed to going and buying just a collection of, here's 20 Atari games on one disc that you can play on the PS2 or something for like $3. Instead, you insist on holding on to the original Atari cartridges, but like you said, you don't want to F around with the original hardware to play them because it's kind of a pain in the butt.
So it is.
That's who this is for.
And there are dozens of us, literally dozens.
Now, why not make a mini of the 7800, include all of the games, or maybe not all the games, take a playbook from Sega and Nintendo and the top 20 or 25 games for the 7800. Do the same thing for the 5200 and the 2600. Have those minis, and I think you would reach a lot more people as opposed to this thing.
But this thing, they're making new games for it. So they're expecting...
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So they're hoping that this is going to live on and be kind of its own niche console well into the future.
I'm just, my biggest thing is I just don't see return on investment for them. You know, there's a lot of people that are going to go out and seek this out.
Perhaps not, but there's always people like you who will buy both the VCS and this thing.
Yeah. Like you said, there's literally dozens of them.
Yeah. And they see me coming every time.
I'll tell you what, though. I would rather have this thing, the Atari 2600 Plus, than what we're going to talk about next.
Segways. Look at us. We're super professional.
Right?
All right. Next up from Eurogamer, Sony's handheld gaming device Project Q now has a proper name and a price. Sony's handheld gaming device, once codenamed Project Q, now has a proper name and a price tag to go with it. It's called the PlayStation Portal Remote Player and promises to bring that PS5 experience to the palm of our hands. As Sony previously said, it will come with the features of a DualSense wireless controller, such as adaptive triggers and haptic feedback. Meanwhile, the Remote Player screen will be capable of 1080p resolution at 60 FPS. PlayStation Portal is the perfect device for gamers in households where they might need to share their living room TV, or simply want to play PS5 games in another room of the house, a blog post about the handheld gaming device explained. As a reminder, the PlayStation Portal is not a standalone console like a Game Boy. Rather, you will still need to own a PS5 already, with the remote player giving you the opportunity to play any games you have installed on your console just elsewhere. For this, you will need to have a Wi-Fi connection, otherwise you'll be out of luck. Sony has suggested a high-speed connection of at least 15 megabits per second for the best experience. PSVR 2 games, which require the headset, and games that are streamed through PlayStation Plus Premium's cloud streaming are not supported, Sony reminded us. Sony's handheld device is set to launch sometime this year, although we don't have a specific date as yet. We do know, however, that when it is available, it will cost $200. The PlayStation team has promised we will hear more soon, including word on pre-orders. When this remote player was first announced back in May, PlayStation boss Jim Ryan stated that innovation was the team's passion. In an earlier chat with investors, Ryan said the then unnamed Project Q was part of a fairly interesting and quite aggressive cloud gaming plan that would be fundamental to Sony being able to exploit that trend of mobility.
I'm deeply disturbed by the fact that there weren't quotation marks around the words high speed when followed with at least 15 megabits per second. All those people running up at 56K modem. Not today.
And of all the things that are wrong with everything that they say here, that's probably not the first thing that I'm going to complain about.
Well, what would you complain about? You have the floor.
Okay. So this final sentence where Ryan said the then unnamed Project Q is part of a fairly interesting and quite aggressive cloud gaming plan that would be fundamental to Sony. But then earlier it says games that are streamed through PlayStation Plus Premium's cloud streaming are not supported. So...
Which one is it, man?
I know. Am I missing something? Or
he's hoping that you wouldn't be able to put those two together, and you did.
My bad. I apologize. This is the worst possible combination of features that I think PlayStation could have put together ever. You have a handheld gaming device that you have to have a PS5 for already, so that you can play games you already own on the PlayStation, but not while somebody else is using it. Only when it's not being used. And then just so you can play it somewhere else in your own house. You can't take it on the go with you or outside or anywhere that's going to be out of range of your Wi-Fi connection, your 15 megabits per second Wi-Fi connection. Who the hell is this for?
It's for the same people that bought a 32X back in the day.
I mean, it's saying... The blog post addresses it. It's for people who just want to share their TV. Well, if everybody else is just watching TV, have them go watch on their tablets or whatever. And coincidentally, you can watch TV on your tablet after you leave the house.
Novel concept.
I know.
Well, look at what Xbox has done. Xbox has their single pane of glass for their PC. So I can, sitting here at my PC, I could play my Xbox without... going downstairs and playing it on that TV. Mm-hmm. Since my kids, they commandeer that TV that's down in the basement. If I wanted to play my Xbox and they're not playing it, I could just turn it on, bam, start playing it from up here. So why not go with something like that as opposed to creating an all new handheld that, oh, I got to go grab this if I want to play it on the crapper.
The Steam Deck and the Switch are doing so well. And so PlayStation says, we need one of those, only way crappier.
Is the Steam Deck doing so well?
Probably not.
I see quite a number of those Steam Decks on Facebook Marketplace in my area.
Yeah, that's usually a sign, isn't it?
Just like the Atari 2600.
The research firm Omdia reported that the Steam Deck sold 1.62 million units in 2022. Their report estimates that the Steam Deck will pass 3 million units sold since its launch sometime during 2023. That sounds not good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Here's another headline that says the Steam Deck has sold fewer than 1% of the number of Switches sold.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Switch killer.
You know, and that was the allure of the Steam Deck, is that you could play your entire Steam library, no matter what game it was, on this particular device on the go. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it was also like a Sega Nomad where you could connect it up to your TV if you wanted to, too.
So considering the Steam Deck can do so many different things, and I assume you can leave the house with it and it still works. If the Steam Deck is struggling to sell when it has tons of functionality, this is probably not even going to sell as much as the Atari 2600 Plus.
Ooh. Burn.
I think it will sell more than the Atari 2600 Plus, but their whole idea of marketing it towards people who have to share a TV, do you really think those people are going to want to drop $200 just to get this thing? Mm-mm. If they only really have one TV? That's not marketing it very well to that demographic.
I don't think so, considering the PS5 itself was already $500.
And exactly. Then
throw another $200 on top of that, so you've got $700 put into just playing this one console.
Burm, burm, burm.
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, though.
All right, next up from CBR. Texas Chainsaw Massacre game won't suffer the same legal struggles as Friday the 13th. Developers of upcoming Texas Chainsaw Massacre video game have promised fans that the game will not face the same legal obstacles as the previous title, Friday the 13th. Ronnie Hobbs, creative director at Gun Interactive, the indie developers behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th, the game, has said that the company took action to ensure its new title does not suffer from the same legal issues as its previous outing, which saw the cancellation of any further contact updates due to a long legal babble regarding its use of licensed characters. According to Hobbs, the development team worked directly with the sole IP owner to ensure proper procedures and licensing agreements for the game's many characters. Guns Interactive initially saw massive success with the release of the multiplayer horror survival game, Friday the 13th, which let players control the mass killer Jason Voorhees or a variety of camp counselors who must escape as he tries to pick them off one by one. However, the company eventually ran into legal troubles after IP co-creators took matters to court to settle an ownership dispute, leading to the developer canceling any further updates to the game and eventually shutting down its servers in 2020. The game is still playable today, though, through peer-to-peer matchmaking, though its player base has dropped off significantly since the shutdown. Despite the previous legal troubles, Gun Interactive's newest title is reportedly safe from such legal issues due to involvement from the IP's sole owner, Kim Henkel, who had both legal and creative input on the game's development. According to Hobbs, Henkel was already interested in developing a game based off the franchise before Gun Interactive approached them, leading to a mutual passion for the title.
Was it Ray Finkel?
And a new pair of shorts. I think this is fantastic. You know, I think that community itself was so disappointed with how that game turned out with Friday the 13th. And now having the same company make kind of the same game, but not have to worry about the fact that the servers are likely going to shut down fairly soon. So this is fantastic news for especially folks who are into horror games in general. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre is such a iconic IP that they could do a lot with, because it's not just one character this time around. I think we've said that on the last episode when we were talking about the release. But still, this is fantastic news for those folks.
I think it also points to the fact that rights ownership is such a mess. Like, I think several weeks ago we were talking about a different story, but it was mentioning that GoldenEye 007 had like six different rights holders, and right, none of them knew who owned what.
Right.
This is a part of intellectual property law that really ought to be streamlined, or something needs to change, because I'm going to imagine that Gun Interactive at least did a little bit of footwork before they made Friday the 13th. Like, they got permission from somebody.
That wasn't the thing with Gun Interactive and Friday the 13th. There were two specific rights holders for Friday the 13th. There was Sean Cunningham and then somebody else. I can't remember the name. The fight was who actually owned the rights over Jason Voorhees and his likeness. So you have two separate things. The whole Friday the 13th concept, initially in the first movie, Jason Voorhees was a mystery figure. He was just a kid that drowned. He was a tall tale. He showed up at the very end.
Spoilers, man.
Right?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ruin your guys'
night. Like the biggest reveal in the entire movie.
And then part two, Jason comes back. He's killing off the counselors. He's got a bag over his head, whatever. But it wasn't until part three when you actually see his iconic hockey mask. Right. That's what made him. That's what everybody identifies Jason Voorhees as. So there were two separate rights there that were button heads over what they could do with Jason and all this. And they're like, oh, you know what? We just, to avoid any more further trouble, like we can't do anything because this guy who says he owns the creative rights to Jason Voorhees will not allow this because he's not seeing money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right. You're not going to see this with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I question this game's longevity. Yes, there are only about a couple of, like maybe a handful of characters. You got Leatherface, the hitchhiker, the cook, and Grandpa, and that's about it. And there's really only one setting. Now, as opposed to Friday the 13th, where you had a multiple, you know, you had Camp Crystal Lake. There were several settings within the movies, like different cabins and stuff like that.
In space.
Do not even go there. But when you have something like Dead by Daylight, that already has Leatherface, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with the rights to that, if they're going to still be allowed to use that. But you have that game who there's always new maps, new killers, new survivors. So what are they going to be able to do to say, okay, here's a new map. Well, how does this fit into the whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre ethos? How is this going to make sense? What new person are you going to be able to bring in here to make this fresh?
I think if you bring in Pedro Pascal to anything, it makes it better. So
you're not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Or Nicolas Cage.
Right.
It's debatable about anything that makes it better, but close. It's a close.
I don't know. I think the video game industry, a huge part of it operates on crossovers now. That could be one thing that they do. And they don't always have to make sense. Like let's take the Xenomorph. Let's put it in Fortnite and give it a gun. Does that have anything to do with the Xenomorph? No. But we're going to do it anyway because everybody's going to love it.
Because America.
And I was thinking of, like, is there any other movies that have a similar plot to Texas Chainsaw Massacre for, like, a crossover? And, like, the first one that comes to mind is Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fairly similar.
And actually, the best thing that they have going for them is that they have the IP sole owner, Kim Henkel, on board with them. So they don't have to stay anchored to the original movies. Right. They could move forward and create new narratives with this if they choose to.
Okay, that's a good point.
And maybe that eventually leads into other movies. I don't know. If this becomes popular enough.
Without having to worry about who owns Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but a separate person says they own Leatherface.
This is
a much cleaner situation, sounds like. And so I think this game has a really good chance.
Maybe they have a crossover with the Muppets or something. I don't know. Miss Piggy is one of the killers running around with a big knife and her curls are bouncing all over the place.
She's wearing Kermit's face. Oh my God.
I didn't even think about that. That's disturbing. Oh God.
But they never really use the names of the people on there. So it'd be like, you know, Jilted Bacon Lover or something like that. You know?
JBL.
Gamers, start your engines. We're proud to let you know that this Saturday, August 26th at 4:30 Eastern Time, Blue and Ryan will be competing in a Mario Kart 8 tournament for Stand Up to Cancer. We'll be racing, commentating, and having a blast with our friends Andy from Love Retro BTW, Pixel Pond, the Retro Blast Podcast, Crunchy Kong, and many more, including the hosts from the event, those crazy guys at The Finer Things. Log into Twitch and search for The Finer Things TTV and follow them, and that way you won't miss any of the alerts or any of the action. And don't worry, we'll have their links in the show notes too. Since this is a charity stream, if you're able to, consider donating to Stand Up to Cancer, a nonprofit that focuses on providing funds for cancer research. We hope to see you all there, and let's blue shell cancer. All right, so why don't we go ahead and look at our top three new releases for the week.
Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, PC. Combining From Software's longstanding expertise in mech games with their signature action gameplay, Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon brings a brand new action experience to the series. Players will pilot their mech in fast-paced, omnidirectional battles, taking advantage of their mech's mobility on land and in the air to ensure victory. Customize armored core parts to suit a large variety of playstyles. Selecting different parts not only changes the mech's attacks, but also directly affects its movement and battle style, so each mission can be approached with a unique mech strategy. Blasphemous 2, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC. Awakened in a strange new land and displaced from his final resting place, the penitent one is thrust back into the endless cycle of life, death, and resurrection, with no other option than to explore this perilous new world and uncover its long-forgotten secrets. Hordes of grotesque enemies stand in your way, with titanic twisted bosses also lurking in the darkness, waiting for their chance to return you to the grave from whence you came. Taking them down won't be easy, but with Blasphemous 2 offering more chances to customize and improve your skill set, along with several new unique weapons to wield with righteous zeal and unending fury, victory might just be within your grasp. Immortals of Avium, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PC. Join the Order of the Immortals, the champion protectors of Lucium, and become Jack, an elite Triarch Magnus. Unleash magic spells with deadly skill and decimate legions of enemies in a game that defies FPS conventions. Experience fast, fluid, first-person spell-based combat that's easy to learn and satisfying to master. In Immortals of Avium, magic is at the core of both offense and defense. Creatively leverage all three forces of magic and be rewarded for chained attacks and well-timed counters. Unlock and upgrade more than 25 spells and 80 talents. Discover, upgrade, and craft hundreds of pieces of magical gear. Then synergize your playstyle across all three forces of magic and become Avium's most powerful Triarch Magnus. So based on these wonderful and grand descriptions this week, Ryan, what's your choice?
So first of all, I just wanted to point out that I think that they missed on this one with Blasphemous 2 making it the number 2 and not T-O-O. I thought that was a miss, first of all.
Blasphemous also?
Correct. but taking a look at these ones, I didn't play the first Blasphemous, but I know that it's fairly popular. So it'd be something I would more than likely be willing to check out. It's kind of up my alley anyway from a gameplay perspective. So
what?
What?
It's a Metroidvania platformer.
Is it? I thought, okay, my bad.
He's coming around.
I see it now. Okay.
Yeah, I am the patron saint of Metroidvanias, don't forget, so.
I f***ed up. It looked like a turn-based RPG. That's why I was excited.
No, not even a little bit.
So no, Blasphemous 2 and definitely not touching that one. Immortals looks like Doctor Strange a little bit.
You know? Okay.
I mean, it looks interesting, right? It's kind of FPS conventions, but with spells. I think you can have up to like 25 different spells, right? Which is cool. Just not something that's like jumping out of me as something I need to pick up. Which leaves me with Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. I love mech games. I don't know what it is about mech games, but I love them. I loved Mech Warrior. I watched Gundam as a kid. I love this kind of stuff. And the one thing that I think separates mech games in particular is just that it's so incredibly customizable that you can add, you know, subtract different weapons, different defensive maneuvers, whatever it is that you want. Often you're looking at being able to replay it several different times to get different outcomes or make things easier, or as you gain knowledge, know which ones to pick first in order to play through it. So
right.
I would love another mech game in my life. So Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. Yeah, this is probably what I'm going to go for this week.
Nice. Blue, which one of these lovely games are you choosing?
Gee, I wonder.
Immortals of Avium, I think visually it looks really cool. It is a first-person shooter with magic elements, so I don't enjoy those types of games, so I won't play it myself, but I would be interested in watching somebody else play it. Armored Core 6, I am not a mech person, but the gameplay itself doesn't look too bad. Other weeks, this would probably be my choice. But yes, of course, I'm going to Blasphemous 2. I loved Blasphemous 1. So yeah, this is a no-brainer for me.
Nice.
What about you, Donnie?
So Immortals of Aveum, I think we touched on it a couple of episodes ago. Ryan hit the nail on the head. It looks like a Doctor Strange type thing, but it just doesn't... I'm kind of getting away from first-person shooter type games. They're just really not that much fun anymore, which leads me to the other two, Armored Core and Blasphemous 2. Armored Core, I could consider playing this game. I do like mech games, although I'm not as invested in them as Ryan is. So this one, you know, I could pick up and probably be happy playing. But Blasphemous 2, I watched the trailer for it, the gameplay, the soundtrack. It looks stunning. I love this type of art style. And if the gameplay is very is what I'm used to as far as like Metroidvanias, then I think it's going to be a no-brainer pickup, not necessarily on day one because the backlog is just increasing. But if this gets a sale or something, and I think right now it's like $26, $25. Come on. That's not a bad price for a game. Mm-mm. That's my pick for this week.
Nice.
All right, so this month we'll be giving away two prizes, a copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the platform of your choice, and a hardcover copy of the official Tears of the Kingdom guide by Nintendo. It's real nice. Now, we had over 220 entries for this one, so we want to give a heartfelt thank you to those who actually listened to the episode as part of your entry. Now, just a quick note about our methodology. All entries are entered into a list randomizer on random.org. If you did the one entry option, your name was entered one time. If you did the three entry option, your name was entered three times. When the giveaway closes, we hit randomize list and let random.org do the rest. So without further ado, this month's winners are Timo MMA, that's Timo with two O's, and Clayman71. Congratulations to you both. Feel free to reach out to us via DM at Gamers Week PC on Twitter to give us your info, and we'll get your prizes sent out. And it's first come, first serve. If you didn't win this month, don't worry. We do a giveaway every single month here on the show, so stick around and keep listening. All right, so why don't we jump into our main topic for the week?
From GameSpot, Gamescom Opening Night Live 2023, all the biggest announcements. Gamescom Opening Night Live has officially kicked off, bringing with it dozens of new trailers and deep dives into upcoming games. Like last year's event, the 2023 edition of ONL was once again focused specifically on games that have already been announced and will be released within the next 12 months. But that doesn't mean there weren't still a few surprises. Here are the biggest announcements from Opening Night Live.
After a lengthy period of operating under the radar, Black Myth: Wukong returned at Opening Night Live with a fresh slice of high-powered gameplay. Journey to the West with a Soulsborne influence, the new trailer showed off some fast, furious action as the Monkey King's son, Wukong, took on some fearsome new foes. Developer Supermassive Games showed its first look at Little Nightmares 3, which adds cooperative gameplay mechanics for the first time in the series. There's still two protagonists in this Little Nightmares game, but this time you'll be able to embark on a creepy adventure on your own or with a friend.
Back for the first time since 2020, Crimson Desert showed off a new trailer and its main character, Cliff, who begins investigating strange phenomena in this action RPG. The new gameplay snippet showed off several of the activities that players could take part in, a closer look at combat, and several mini-games that you can enjoy when it eventually launches. Killing Floor 3 painted Opening Night Live red with a new trailer, which teases a futuristic setting with Homicidal Zeds wielding cybernetic upgrades. Not much more was shown beyond that brief teaser, but you can expect Killing Floor 3 to launch for Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC in the future.
Fighting game fans have been eating well in 2023, and come 2024, Bandai Namco is preparing to serve up a fresh dish of fisticuffs with its next Tekken game. Tekken 8 will launch on January 26, 2024 for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X and S, and in a new trailer, Bandai Namco showed off the game's single-player mode. A new trailer for Assassin's Creed Mirage showed off the impressive lengths that Ubisoft has gone to create an authentic adventure set in the Middle East. Fully voiced in Arabic, the new gameplay video focused on a conversation between the game's protagonist, Basim, and his companion, Roshan, as they explore an ancient version of Baghdad.
It's official. Nightingale will be headed to early access on PC in February 2024. The early slice of this game will be available on both Steam and Epic Games Store next year, and we'll see players explore the Fey Realms after a mysterious virus wipes out most of humanity in the late 1800s. Sonic Superstars finally has a release date of October 17th, in case you were wondering if that month wasn't busy enough yet. A charming throwback to classic Sonic games, but with more modern visuals. Sonic Superstars allows you to play as the Blue Blur while your friends join in on the fun with Tails, Knuckles, and Amy Rose.
Stormgate, a love letter to classic Blizzard strategy games like StarCraft and WarCraft, is due out in 2024 and features a clash between sci-fi armies. Humanity's vanguard against the demonic hordes of the Infernal Host. Which side will you choose? That's entirely up to you. But as seen in a brief new teaser, the Infernal Host looks like a devilish delight with its gung-ho approach to battle. In a new trailer for Mortal Kombat 1, NetherRealm's Ed Boon introduced a few familiar faces to the game's already loaded roster. Shao Kahn, reimagined as General Shao in this game, was in the spotlight alongside Sindel and two new cameo fighters, Mortal Kombat 3 boss Motaro, and Mortal Kombat Deception protagonist Shujinko.
A new trailer for Era History Untold showed the first gameplay for the upcoming turn-based grand strategy game from developer Oxide Games and publisher Xbox Game Studios. Similar to other 4X strategy titles, you'll need to guide a civilization across multiple spheres of influence, cultivating their key diplomatic, military, culture, and technological strengths across the ages. Alan Wake 2 closed out opening night live with a spooky new trailer. With a mix of live action and in-game survival horror creepiness, the new trailer showed off the nightmarish New York City prison conjured up by the dark place, which Wake has been stuck in for over a decade. So, it's going to be a busy upcoming year.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's like, wow, finally. It's going to be stuff to talk about. Yes.
All right.
Interested to see what's going to happen with Mortal Kombat 1. I watched some gameplay. I watched that trailer with Sindel and Shao Kahn, or General Shao, and it looks busy. It looks like there's a lot. I mean, a lot of stuff to do in there. And with fighting games now, it seems like they're all just busy. So many different combos, so many different fatalities and super moves and stuff like that. And it's really getting to be, dare I say, too much.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. I think that when you make it too complex, it takes away the fun factor of the game. I mean,
does it?
It does a little bit, I think, with fighting games in particular, just because you have so much going on all at once, it becomes really convoluted, I think. And I think it dilutes some of the fun factor for me, at least. So, I'd agree with that.
I would think that the people who play fighting games are always looking for a new challenge. And so if it's more complicated and convoluted, maybe that's what the hardcore fighting game people are into. And for everybody else, you can do like what Street Fighter VI did and do the different control modes so that instead of having the really complicated button combos, you can just turn it into a button masher for the normies, and they can still enjoy the game and feel successful.
The normies.
I don't know for sure if Mortal Kombat 1 is going to do that, but it is a possible avenue for them to take. I was mainly watching that trailer and wondering, Shao Kahn into General Shao. Like, are Mortal Kombat, hardcore Mortal Kombat fans, do they like their favorite characters being messed with? Are they okay with this?
It's a risk. You've got a tried and true franchise that's been around for 30 years. Is that right? Carry the one?
Don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. It's 30 plus years that has a definitive history. It's what we've come to know about this game and this franchise. And now you're flipping the script and saying, hey, guess what? The Elder God is going to be Liu Kang now. And Raiden is now going to be the Earth's champion instead of Liu Kang. So we're flipping that. And now this guy's going to be doing this. And now this person's now a cook and a chef. And this one's a bank teller.
Candlestick maker.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the game Scrabble, where you put all the letters in the little box and you shake it.
I've never heard of this
no,
game.
No, not Scrabble. What's it called?
Boggle.
So you put all the letters in the little plastic box, you shake it, and then however the letters land, and then the point of the game Boggle is you're meant to find words in the letters. But it's kind of like they took Mortal Kombat lore and put it in the little plastic box and shook it up and wait to see where it landed. And see who gets to be Earth's champion. Okay. Yeah, shake it up, Raiden.
It's Striker. Striker.
But aside from Mortal Kombat 1, I thought the trailer for the new Tekken game, that looks awesome. I was somehow under the impression that it was coming out in September. So to see that it's now coming out in January, I was like, all right, that's okay. I can be patient and hopefully it will be worth waiting for. I was also really interested in Black Myth Wukong. I do love those kinds of Soulsy looking games. And this one looks really fun and it looks like a type of lore that I don't know much about. So I look forward to seeing what that game has to show. And another one that got me really, really excited at first. And then I was like, oh no. And then I was like, yay. It was an emotional roller coaster watching this, but Little Nightmares 3.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's such a great series. And then they're showing the trailer for Little Nightmares 3 and it's co-op. And I was like, no, I don't want to play with anyone else. I want to play by myself. And then they kind of wrap it up by saying, no, you can play by yourself if you want to. And I hope that it's still as good of an experience by yourself.
Right.
In my experience, co-op games don't translate well. They are designed for more than one person. And even if they allow you to play by yourself, it's never the same. It's never as good. So fingers crossed that this one will be.
I in particular, and I know this is like the nerdy answer and you're all going to roll your eyes like, oh, of course you picked that one. but Ara, History Untold looked really great.
Oh, God, of course you picked that one.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Need more games like Civilization and Age of Empires in my life, okay? That needs to happen. And it's kind of cool that they're still coming out with it because it's exactly the most popular genre. So the fact that they're still making games like that, it's an exciting experience. So it's a strategy game, right? At the beginning of the podcast, we don't like strategy games. Well, guess what?
Ryan does.
The thing is, too, it was a surprise for me because I hadn't heard about this game prior to that. And I was like, oh, okay. Look at you. Okay. Ryan's going to check you out.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Sonic.
We know how much you love platformers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks fun. Again, I'm a little concerned about the co-op aspect, whether it's just as good for a single player, but I'll wait and see. It looks fun anyway.
I noticed we didn't talk about Assassin's Creed being a game that you were looking forward to. Care to elaborate?
I thought the trailer looked good. I just, at this point, what more are they really going to do with Assassin's Creed? Are they going to continue to put out the same thing over and over and over again? You know, like we're entering Call of Duty territory.
You could have said Mega Man territory. Is that a better? Does that hurt your feelings less?
Assassin's Creed, Modern Warfare, you know?
This one is supposed to, or at least it looks like it's trying to bring the series back to its roots. I don't know. I think maybe I would prefer to see it go in a completely different direction, but wait and see.
I think a lot of these were kind of wait and see, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
One thing that I thought was kind of interesting is Alan Wake combining the live action with the gameplay.
Yeah.
It gave me kind of like a Night Trap or Full Motion Video vibe to it.
Night Trap. That boy will find you.
Like the dev said, oh, it'll be a seamless, you know, transition from live action to the game and back and forth. It didn't look it though in the trailer. It didn't look seamless to me.
Now, I am looking forward to Alan Wake 2. I've been a fan of the series, and when I saw the first trailer a couple months ago, it looked amazing. It looked very dark, and I'm all in for this type of horror game.
So when you get back to streaming in the hot tub,
I don't have a hot tub.
Yeah, because we were told there would be streams coming up.
Yeah, and we were told there would be a hot tub.
Yeah, I would
I was told there would be three in the hot tub. And I said, no salt. No salt in the margarita. Yes, there will be streams.
More streams, and with hot tubs, more steam. All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the people who lived it. Join host Bill Tucker along with a rotating cast of friends, family, podcasters, journalists, and anybody with a story to tell as they go beyond the bits and bytes to share personal recollections of the last 30 years of gaming. This week, Bill is collecting questions for an upcoming Ask Me Anything episode of Gamer Looks at 40. So to submit your question, look for Bill's pinned tweet on Twitter Bill's pinned tweet on Twitter at A Gamer Looks at 40. So here's our question for your AMA. What video game character is your spirit animal? I'm going to go with Snorlax.
That's the obvious answer. There's a character in Hollow Knight called Willow. It's an NPC character. You may not even find her in the game. But if you do find her and talk to her, you find out that the world is going to hell all around her. And she's just in her little hole eating and is perfectly happy there.
Wow, that was profound. Deep. This game was made pre-pandemic, too.
Yep. Team Cherry can see the future.
Donnie, what about you?
I can't answer this type of question off the cuff, man. I need time to think. And if I had to say, it'd be Glass Joe, because I could take it on the chin and get right back up.
I like that.
Yeah, that'll work.
Submission accepted.
Damn it.
All right. Thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrandt's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll talk about those wonderful afternoons in the 80s and 90s when we would flock to our televisions to be amazed by the gameplay and prizes. We, of course, are discussing the early history of video game shows. Today, if you want to watch somebody compete for video game glory, you have a lot of options to choose from. Twitch, YouTube, Kick, TikTok, and much more. But back in the day, you were relegated to challenge the friends you knew when you were hanging out, or drive over to the arcade and see your local wizard for some likely punishment at the expense of your quarter. Much like sports, watching people play games is part of the culture of the video game community. Your only other solution came in the 1980s with the introduction of game shows tailored towards gamers. Side note, we'll only be talking about game shows that were made with live contestants in the studio. Sorry, 1970s call-in game shows. You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
I was wondering, we're only talking about shows with live contestants as opposed to...
Dead?
Yeah.
Dead contestants.
The Weekend at Bernie shows?
They should have made a video game out of that.
A weird stealth game.
I love it. Well, as you probably know, game shows in the 1970s and 80s were extremely popular genre of television in the U.S. From The Price is Right to Card Sharks to even The Newlywed Game, people wanted to watch others play games. It's only natural that video games would be a perfect fit for such a show. Not to mention they were typically much less costly to produce than sitcoms or drama shows. So who broke the barrier and began the first show? Well, that would be Starcade.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you guys have any memories of Starcade?
I never saw it until I was an adult and the internet was a thing.
And I wouldn't imagine. I mean, it came out in 82. So
when did it go off the air?
84.
Okay. Yeah. No, I completely missed it.
Yeah. 82. I only would have been like 4 years old, 84, you know, 6 years old. I remember it very vaguely. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first signed up on Twitch a couple of years ago, and they had a channel that played the old Starcade episodes. And I'm like, oh, my God, I get to sit here and watch this forever. I forgot all about this.
And I like Starcade because it is such a time capsule, yes, of the 1980s. as soon as you watch it, you know the show's from the 80s. It just the way everybody dresses, the way people talk, it's just, it is such a perfect time capsule. So getting its start in December 27th, 1982, the show was intended to capture young viewers and help market arcade machines of the day. That's right. The show was really intended just to market arcade machines. Oh, right.
Shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Now, the format, relatively simple. Two players would answer trivia questions about video games, and the person who got the question right gets to choose from five arcade machines they brought out on the show. Both opponents would compete for a high score, and those points would be accumulated in 40 to 60 seconds and would be how they scored in the overall game. Winner of three rounds would then go on to play the last arcade game for a bonus prize. All they had to do was beat the average score of 20 players of the game. Prizes typically consisted of going home with your own arcade cabinet. I would have died to get an arcade cabinet in my house as a kid. Now, one of the most memorable parts of the show was the game show host, Jeff Edwards, who was in his 50s at the time and was trying really hard to be hip, often trying to relate to tween contestants about how he liked to play a certain game. It's cringe in the best way possible. But unfortunately, the show only lasted 2 years, so it was canceled in 1984. Pour one out for Starcade. Now, while there were a few shows in North America with a video game twist that came out in the mid to late 80s, which included a spinoff of Battle of the Network Stars called Battle of the Video Games, which featured the likes of Scott Baio, Heather Locklear, and Lou Ferrigno. It wasn't until... Yeah, right? It wasn't until the early 90s did we see a resurgence of video game shows. So in 1990, we would see the full-on neon and tude show Video Power, hosted by the over-the-top character of Johnny Arcade, played by Stevie Peskoski. Originally, the show, interestingly enough, was not a game show at all. It aired cartoons of Johnny Arcade and characters from the Nintendo Entertainment System, as well as a section for Johnny to review new games. But eventually, they switched to a game show format. Show was a mixture of video game trivia and gameplay challenges. The player who won would go on to the prize round, which was what most viewers dreamed of doing. A player would walk through or run through a maze and collect new boxed games and attach them with Velcro to their body.
Yes.
Yep. Whatever the player would stick or grab, they went home with. However, in the haste of trying to traverse the maze and stick them to your person, the games got pretty beat up. And so it's pretty much unwatchable for someone like myself today.
Exactly, me too.
But lastly, we'll talk about Nick Arcade. Nickelodeon, at the time, was the biggest children's focused television channel in North America. Naturally, kids at the time were big into video games, so bringing that format to their network was pretty much a no-brainer. They picked Phil Moore to host the show, who would go on to be a staple at the Nickelodeon network, appearing on several game shows and even hosting the Kids' Choice Awards in 1995. Now, the show consisted of a few key elements missing from older shows. For one, it played like a board game, more or less, where players would move an avatar named Mikey to reveal either prizes, trivia questions, puzzles, or video game challenges. Teams would compete for the most points in order to advance in the final round, called the Video Zone, which consisted of a virtual reality adjacent challenge. In fact, the typical color of Nickelodeon game shows like Double Dare usually had team colors of blue or red, but Nick Arcade used red and yellow. Any ideas why? Why didn't they use the blue?
Don't know.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Well, it was specifically because they used a blue background for their chroma key function in the Video Zone. So much like a weatherman, if you got the same color as the background behind you, all of those things would have been lost, so you wouldn't be able to see the players. So they picked yellow instead.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Video Zone, player would stand in front of a blue screen and included platforms and ladders for them to attempt to reach the goal. I remember this specifically, getting mad at this, because it was the most janky virtual reality, quote unquote, style game, because the players are basically watching a screen, them on the screen, and trying to, you know, do movements like you're on a floating raft and you had to dodge other elements that were coming at you, you know, birds and alligators, and you had to collect these gems. But the thing is, like, it wasn't very intuitive. So imagine it's like playing a game with lag nowadays, but you're trying to win a prize at the same time. Right.
A lot of rage.
Right. But the thing is, it was all these platforms. You had a goal that you had to reach, and it consisted of three different levels. And then the final level, you would play against the video game wizard of the week. And I remember at the beginning of the show, they would say, find out who this week's video game wizard is going to be, Sorsha, or blah, 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 blah. There was always three options. And it was like the final boss that you would have to fight. And you had to get certain orbs or something in order to go on to that. Now, the prize for my recollection was always a trip to Nickelodeon Studios in Orlando, Florida. I was like, sweet. I mean, cool.
Are you kidding? I'd have killed for that.
I want the video power prizes. I don't want that crap, you know? I want to run through the maze. I want to pick up new video games. Apparently, that's just me. I'm in the minority.
I want to get the damaged NES boxes that fall off these kids' vests that just lie on the floor. I want to scoop those things up.
All of a sudden, they're taping, and Donnie just comes up, just punches the kid in the face instead.
What are you doing? You just dented this Final Fantasy box, you chode.
Have some respect.
So Nick Arcade itself, though, recorded 84 episodes of the show consisting of two seasons and technically was still on the air until the 2010s when they played reruns of the show for Nickelodeon Games and Sports. So it went from the early 90s all the way up to the 2010s. Not bad.
No, it was a great run.
Yeah. But so how many years did they actually shoot episodes?
Two.
So in 2009, kids were watching something from the early 90s going, what the heck is this crap?
Exactly. Exactly. But they were also watching, you know, Nickelodeon Guts. Do you have it? But the relevancy of them playing. The thing is, though, most of the games on Nick Arcade weren't like NES games at the time, right? So they weren't playing specific. They were games that were designed specifically for the show that were quote-unquote video games. So, for example, like the Face-Off was the first game they played on the show, and usually it was something like Pong, but with just better graphics.
Yay! Yeah.
They were just playing really crappy games that were produced in an hour.
Homebrews.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, to wrap things up, video game show or game show showcased the initial integration of video games into the television entertainment space. Now, these early shows highlighted the excitement of gaming competitions and the potential of virtual reality-ish and the growing recognition of video games as a significant cultural phenomenon. So thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. And just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion. All right. So that'll about do it for us here at Gamers Week. Thank you for listening to episode 87 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. And if you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit us at our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com, or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or the podcast platform of choice.
There's a train horn.
Right. always. And it, you know, I was talking to a realtor today and they're like, oh, the train doesn't come through. I was like, the fuck it doesn't.
No, they're saying the train doesn't come through. Wink.
Well, like, oh, it only comes through on Sundays. Yeah. Yeah. Except right, yeah. Whenever I record a podcast. Yeah. And does he really need to pump the horn? There's nobody on the street.
Man, some random kid is just laying awake in bed. He's like, man, you know what would really make my life so much better right now? I want to hear a train horn.
Thank you, God.
The universe is listening.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Nobody messes with the Jesus.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.